It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Trey Schaap. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4-inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Trey Schaap. UAMS Ortho Now, open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, and Saturday, 8 to noon. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports, work, or anything else, go in and see the best in orthopedic care. No appointment is needed. The Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health, home to UAMS Ortho Now. For more information, call 501-686-TOSH. That's 501-686-8674. We're going to get right to it after the break. Kyle Peterson, ESPN's college baseball analyst, is joining me via Zoom on From the Shortgrass. Stay tuned.
This is Justin Akery. If hand or wrist pain is getting in the way of your daily life, it's time to see the specialists at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. Their fellowship-trained hand and wrist surgeons treat everything from arthritis and fractures to nerve injuries and carpal tunnel. And with Arkansas's only hand trauma telemedicine program, advanced care is available around the clock. Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today and get back to living pain-free. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own, to seize opportunity, to anticipate rather than react, to deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world, and to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am Trey Schaap. Kyle Peterson retired from the game of baseball in 2002. Upon his retirement, Peterson joined ESPN as an analyst on college, major league, and little league events. Since 2003, he has covered the College World Series, Little League World Series, and major league games as well. He now works as an analyst for the SEC Network and ESPN. He played baseball at Stanford University, drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers in the first round, and pitched for the Brewers before an injury shortened his career. He loves the game of golf, and I think you're really going to enjoy his story. On the tee, Kyle Peterson.
Kyle, welcome to this edition of From the Shortgrass. Thanks for joining me. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club and fell in love with the game?
No, I can't say I remember the first time. I remember, I was little. My dad, I hit left-handed. So my dad wanted to get me playing golf. And we went to some, place that sold used clubs. And I grabbed a left-handed set of clubs or whatever and started swinging. And he's like, no, we're not going to do that. I don't think I can look at a left-handed golf swing. So he bought me right-handed clubs, and I was, probably 5 or 6. So it had to be right around there. But, yeah, then I apparently became a right-handed golfer at that point. So who knows? I could have screwed up my entire golf career, but I'll blame it on my dad.
Yeah, screwing up your golf career. You had a great baseball career. We'll talk about that. I mean, growing up, did you play multiple sports when you were growing up?
Yeah, I played – I kind of played them all. I mean, for a lot of kids then, I know that doesn't happen as much now, but yeah, it was, basketball, football, baseball, golf, then some randoms mixed in there, but it was primarily those four, and then played them all the way up through, through middle school, then played all three for a year in high school, then played basketball and baseball all the way through. And our golf season was high school golf season was the same as baseball. If it would have been the fall, I would have played golf and never played football. But it was in the spring, and obviously I couldn't do it then. But yeah, it's he used to take my dad. He'd go to the office. I don't know. I was probably 8 or 9 or 10, and he'd drop me off at the golf course on the way to the office, and I was just there for 5, 6 hours, and I'd hit balls for a little bit, then I'd go play by myself or grab a buddy, and then I'd have lunch, and then my mom would pick me up, and it was a super cool way to grow up.
Were you self-taught or did you have some instruction besides your dad?
No, my dad wasn't very good. So it was, yeah, I mean, self-taught. We had a, at the time, the guy that was the pro, one of the pros at our place was a guy named Tom Siekman, who ended up playing on tour for a little bit, actually won. And I had a couple lessons for him. It was like the junior golf stuff growing up. And so they, I'm sure, put you in the little deal. But I always grabbed it like a baseball bat. And then finally, as I got older, started changing the grip a little bit. It still stinks, but at least it's not grabbed like a baseball bat. But it was, I mean, for the most part, I think it was just kind of go out and screw around and figure out what works at a young age and try to be athletic. That's what I mean. My two of my kids played golf, or I guess they both still do. And that's what we tried to do early, is get them in junior golf, but also not have a bunch of instruction early. Just let them be as athletic as possible. And then as they get older, to where when somebody tells them something, they maybe have the physical ability to do a little bit more than start bringing that into it.
Just kind of let them feel the game and try to make it their own, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, just watching youth golf growing up with my kids, I think there's a value to, a golf swing being athletic and not feeling like you got to get here and lay it off here and the slot and all the other stuff that you hear when you get older, but just grab it and hit it. And then wherever it goes, go hit it again. And it felt, and some of it came from guys that I knew that, I mean, one in particular that was ended up being my son's coach and my daughter's swing coach, but he wouldn't do anything with them until they were 12 or 13. And that was his deal, is, hey, you like just try to make them be athletic and then try to make them love the game. And if those two things are happening, then when they get to an age that I feel like things that we're talking about, they can actually do and replicate, then we'll start doing it more. So when they were both 12 or 13, then they started doing that.
Can they beat you now?
I mean, he can. He went to Hutch Junior College down in Kansas to play. Went for a semester and I think got a little bit burnt out. And then went to Ole Miss, just go to school for a semester, and then said he wanted to play. So he's at a Division III school down in Lincoln, Nebraska Wesleyan. Is on the team. Has played a little bit. Hadn't played a whole lot. And then my daughter, I've got a middle daughter, is a freshman at Tennessee. Did not play golf. Her mind was not built for it. She was kind of speed and soccer. And but the little one's turned into a really good player. She, their high school has won state the last 2 years. Went to Pinehurst last year for kind of the national deal. And then she finished, I think she tied for fifth this year, her junior. So I don't think she's got me yet, but she's, I would say, comparatively a better player than he is, just among his peers. And it's been super cool because her mindset on a golf course is way different than his mindset. I mean, he's never seen a pin that he doesn't love, and she's more smart about the ones and where she's trying to put it. And it's amazing that you can see their personalities when they go out there and play and how different it is. But the amount of time that I spent walking a golf course following those two, and especially with him, good, just going around the country to junior events and things like that. It was an awesome father-son and father-daughter experience that I'm not quite ready to give up yet.
I was going to say, Kyle, what kind of enjoyment do you get out of that, seeing your children succeed on the course in a sport that you love?
Yeah, I mean, this may sound bad, but I also get enjoyment watching them fail, because I think that's one of the great things about sports is when that happens and you figure out how you're going to respond to it and ultimately what happened to get to that point. And golf, I think it's very similar to pitching in that, once the ball leaves your hand or once the ball leaves the club head, there's nothing you can do. That's it. And it may hit a sprinkler head. It may, I mean, there's so many different things that can happen, even if you hit it well, that are totally out of your control. And so it was easier for me to be around them in that game because I felt like I had experienced it a little bit in a different game, but in kind of, I don't know, in direct response, similar to a way that the golfers feel and kind of have to think their way around the course. But yeah, man, it was great. I don't even know. This has got to be 6 years ago, 7 years ago. He qualified for some deal down at Pinehurst. Yeah, and they played 4-4, and then if he made the cut, they played two in the last round. So I caddied for him the first day. I think he was in eighth grade, and it was like, all right, dude, the bunker's 220. Like, don't hit 3-wood. Hit something that you're not going to get to the bunker, and then he'd pull 3-wood, and it would go in the bunker. And so we got to the end of the round. I said, I think maybe I'm just going to be dad tomorrow. And I think it's probably good for you kind of do it the way that you want to do it. And I'm going to grab a beer and walk behind you for 5 hours. And he goes, yeah, I kind of wanted to talk to you about the same thing. I said, great. Okay. We're on the same page. And that was, I don't think I've carried his bag since then. But it was healthy. It was kind of, all right, if you're going to make these decisions, you got to live with it. I had made him a deal. The guy that caddied, we played two when we got down there because I wanted to play it.
Yeah.
And the guy that caddied for us, I'm like, if you make the cut, he can be your caddy when you play two. And he made the cut on the number, and that dude caddied for him. He ended up tripling. He started on 10. He tripled 10, but then shot 76. He played great after that. And the dude kind of looked at me after one. I'm like, this is like standard operating procedure. He's gonna have one of these. It just happened to be on the first hole. He'll figure it out. And it was pretty stress-free, just hanging out and watching and knowing that you take your hands off the wheel and let him go.
People think 10's a par five and the easy starting hole, but it's not. You get to that green and it is just ridiculous. All
It's
of them
such
are.
a, it too is such a cool golf course. And it's, yeah, I mean, there's defense outside of it. Like you hit it in those, I don't know what they are, the things that look like grass until you try to hit out of them. And then it feels like you're hitting out of like a fence. And you don't realize until you do it the first time and your club head just stops the minute that you make contact. But I mean, the greens there are so diabolical that, if you're not hitting them and you're missing on the wrong side, you're absolutely dead. Yeah, that was one of the tougher golf courses that I've ever played just because of that. I mean, you think the approach looks totally normal, and if you just miss, you're dead.
You went to Stanford to play baseball, and you were out at Stanford at a time that another talented athlete was out there by the name of Tiger Woods. Any interaction that you and Tiger had in your time at Stanford?
Yeah, I don't know that Tiger will remember a whole lot of this, but he lived 2 doors down my sophomore year, so we ate in the same place. And he ended up my freshman year. I don't really know why. I know why. We went to a Jimmy Buffett concert. He didn't go with, but I had gone to a Jimmy Buffett concert a couple weeks before, and I got a keg. So I still had a keg that was in my dorm room. I just kept it on ice because I didn't know what else to do with it, and it wasn't dead. And he ended up, it was a Friday or Saturday night, and he was in the dorm and the keg wasn't tapped yet. And I'm like, hey man, I'm probably never going to play golf with you the rest of my life, but we're going to do it right now. And so I took like a super big gulp and filled it with beer and put it at the end of the hallway and grabbed a Sam Wedge and two balls and said, all right, whoever makes it, the other guy's got to drink it. And shockingly, Tiger made it before I did. So I guess technically I played golf with him, but that was the extent of it right there.
What was his reaction when you said that?
He kind of looked at me sideways, like, we're going to do what? I'm like, have you ever played quarters? And then he looked at me like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, all right, well, this is the way you play quarters. And he bounced it. And if it goes in, the other guy's going to drink it. This is quarters, but we're doing it with a sand wedge and two golf balls. Yeah, and I mean, we're chipping in the hallway, and the RA kind of comes out and looks. I'm like, it's fine. We're not hitting drivers. Like, we're not gonna dent a whole lot right now. But yeah, he was. I mean, the times I was around him, we went to like a formal deal in the city one night, and he stayed 2 years. And I remember we were walking back from lunch one day, and Tiger was going towards lunch, and he was all decked out in Nike. Like top to bottom, the hat, everything. And we're like, all right, that's it. He's going. And
Yeah.
a week or two later that he announced it, and then obviously had a decent amount of success after that.
Yeah, I would say so. You've had a great amount of success as well, drafted 13th in the first round by the Milwaukee Brewers. What was your time like in Milwaukee?
Well, I wasn't there very long. It was awesome because you're in the big leagues, but you don't really realize how great it is, I think, until you can't do it anymore, until it's gone, especially if you're not there very long. I mean, I went up at the All-Star break when I was 23, I think, and pitched that second half of the season. I got hurt and was on the DL the whole year the next year, trying to come back from shoulder surgery, and then made three or four starts the following year. Then that was it. I had three shoulder surgeries and it just didn't work anymore. And I guess if it wasn't going to work anymore, I'm glad that I was out of the game when I was 26, because then it gave me the ability to go on and do something else. But yeah, I mean, Milwaukee felt like a bigger Omaha, which was comforting. And I got to play in the old stadium, got to play in the new stadium. So it was kind of when they were building what was then Miller Park. I mean, it was cool. It was super cool. I mean, that was the time. It was like Bonds and Sosa and Maguire, and when everything was going crazy. I think the following year is when they hit all the home runs. But it was a really interesting time in the game because that home run component was so important, and obviously a variety of other things that came with it. But it was an awesome experience. And again, like. And if it wasn't going to work, it was great to be done at an early age and then figure out what the rest of life looks like.
Kyle, do you believe that pitchers make the best golfers because of the fact that they can play during the season because they're not pitching every day if they wanted to?
Yeah. I mean, guys would bring them on the plane. I wasn't there long enough that I was comfortable doing it. But every once in a while, guys would bring them on the plane if you knew you weren't going to pitch. And we'd always play in spring training. I mean, the way that spring training worked is if the team was on the road and you weren't going to pitch, you were done at like 11 because you do everything in the morning and then they get on the bus to go wherever they're going. And if unless you didn't have treatment, you're done. So those days we'd go straight to the golf course. Whoever wasn't pitching that day, and you'd figure out what your game is that day and figure out places you can play. We were in Phoenix, where they still are. But yeah, I think it's dead on. I mean, it seems like hockey players are that same way too. And I don't know if it's just the swing or what it is. Those guys seem to be really good players. But yeah, you look at the guys that play in those celebrity deals, and most of the ones that are the best players are guys that pitched.
Have you ever thought about playing in a celebrity event?
I don't know. I don't think I'm celebrity enough to play in a celebrity event, but
Oh, you're celebrity enough.
I don't. Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be fun. I played. There's a Korn Ferry event that comes through here every year, and I've played in that pro-am, I don't know, probably four or five times, and played with some really interesting dudes. Played with Zach Blair the last time, who was so much fun. And now, he got his car. Now he's designing courses, and he's got a clothing line and all these other things, but was the most chill guy that I've ever been around in walking around. And I always thought it was so interesting in those deals just to get to know their caddies. Because the life of a caddy is so massively interesting, because they've all had different, they all have a different story. At some point, yeah, it'd be super cool to play in those. I'm not gonna win it. I mean, that I'm realistic enough, but to be in that environment again, it'd be really fun.
Your time at ESPN, when you hurt your shoulder, I was reading up, you basically kind of lucked into the ESPN gig, I guess. You were doing some basically pay-per-view stuff, and they saw it and they're like, okay, we want you to do more. And that ballooned into what you're doing now, right?
Yeah, we had. So I got released in spring training in 03. And then Scott Boras was my agent and asked Scott and Scott Champorito, who still works for Scott, like, hey, this is something that I have an interest in, but I have no idea how to get into it. And I really haven't done it. So they reached out to ESPN, and it was the first year that we as ESPN were doing super regionals. And so they just needed people because they had never had to staff something in college baseball that they had eight different teams that were going out and doing it. And so they said, okay, we'll give you a shot to do this. And I thought I was going to do two games and go start the job that I had was going to start in Minneapolis, and went and did a super regional. It was on pay-per-view. And then they called and said, hey, we'd like you to go to Omaha to the series. We don't know how we're going to use you. And it's like called the group back that had hired me and said, hey, will you give me another 2 weeks? They were cool. When did that? Then ESPN called after and said, we'd like you to do more games. And guys, I this is awesome and I appreciate it. But at the end of the day, I got a pretty good job lined up. And so I'm willing to do it, but I need something that, is some kind of a contract for a period of time. So they gave me a 2 year deal for the balance of that year and the following year. And that was 23 years ago. So yeah, I thought I was going to go for a weekend, do something that I had always wanted to do just because it seemed interesting. And I don't know why, but I grew up really paying attention to people that did games. And we got the Braves, the Cubs, and the Mets. That's what you got to know because it was WGN, WOR, and TBS. And I ended up being a Braves fan because I could watch them. So you grew up watching those guys all the way through. And, that was the Harry Carey day, the Cubs, and everything else that went with it. And I ended up loving it. And I guess they thought I was good enough to let me hang around for a while.
Looking at this season, and obviously everybody wants to get to Omaha where you are from, getting there is the difficult part. And then, of course, trying to win is even more difficult. It takes a little bit of luck. Dave Van Horn, it seems like he's had great teams that don't get there or teams that get there and then they just don't have the luck. Look at 2018, for example. Do you think like Dave Van Horn, the Razorbacks, are a team that can get to Omaha this year and maybe win it all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think nobody's been more consistent over the last 7 or 8 years than Arkansas has. I think the stat was that I think they've won at least 18 games in the league every year since 19, and that's obscene in that league. I mean, it's just the consistency to be able to win that many because you win 18 games. You're going to play at home probably for 2 straight weeks in the postseason until you get Omaha, definitely for one, but in most cases, I think two. So I think the consistency with what Dave has done there, and even before 2019, but and then it really does come down to do you get some baseball luck when you get there? You got to have baseball luck sometimes to get there, the draw or whatever else happens. But they just haven't had great baseball luck in the biggest years that they've been there. I mean, the 2 games that everybody references, I was in the booth for both of them. And last year you wanted to run down the field and hug Davalon because the kid was so important to him the entire year. And it's one of those plays that he's probably going to make 95 out of 100 times, maybe more than that. And for whatever reason, didn't see it right or didn't break right or, he kind of spins a wheel a little bit and changes the course of the whole thing. It's sports. I mean, it stinks when it happens to you. I mean, 1 year at the College World Series are some of the greatest memories that I have in college baseball. And another year at the College World Series, I got absolutely bombed by LSU. But I wouldn't give up the opportunity either time because you get a chance to go compete and then you figure out once you get out there what it looks like. So I would love, like, just from a human standpoint, to see Dave win it because, I mean, clearly he deserves it for everything he's done in the game and everything he's done at Arkansas. But I've said this a few times over the last couple of months, like, but if he doesn't, it doesn't diminish anything that he's done over the course of his career. He's one of the best to do it.
You pitched on the mound at Rosenblatt, Gage Wood last year, his performance with the no-hitter and basically one out away from a complete game. Can you put that into perspective?
Yeah, it was interesting. We were after it wasn't after the game, but it was a couple of days later. We were talking to Matt Hobbs, the pitching coach at Arkansas, just about that game from a pitch calling standpoint. And he said, I've never called as many middle fastballs in my life as I did in that game because he kept doing the same thing. And there, I mean, it wasn't just that, but they couldn't hit it. And it was the day that where the velocity was there, the carry that he had on the fastball was elite, and guys couldn't make an adjustment. So if they can't make an adjustment, keep throwing it until they can, and they couldn't. But it's fascinating in those environments to see guys do things that are, just the elite of the elite. Especially when it matters the most. And I think big environments have a way of affecting people different ways. And obviously, and the cool thing too is that outing, I wouldn't say that outing, but probably the last month of the season, Probably make Gage Wood $1 million because you start there's, and we've seen this, like Cade Horton was the same way at Oklahoma 3 or 4 years ago, where he comes in and goes off for 2 weeks and all the big eyes are on it because the draft hasn't happened yet. And they get a different look at it. And now Cade Horton's in the big leagues and he probably would have been there anyway, but I don't know if he gets drafted where he was drafted by the Cubs. Probably the same thing for Gage, that the eyes that ultimately are going to make the decision are watching him on the biggest stage. And, you know, he puts together the best outing he's ever had.
Best golf course Kyle Peterson's ever played.
I've been like way fortunate when it comes to this. Cypress, Pine Valley, Sand Hills, probably be the top three. Cypress is religious. When you walk across, when you walk across the one going to 15 and you get on the water and, you know, you get this little 98-yard par three followed by one of the greatest par threes ever designed in the history of the world. I mean, Pine Valley was obscene. And then Sand Hills, selfishly, because it's in our state. And I think that, you know, when they did Sand Hills, nobody thought the golf courses like that could exist in the state of Nebraska. Now there's, you know, probably half dozen, not as renowned as Sand Hills, but similar to what they've done. It's the most peaceful place that you can go. Oh, because all you hear are the animals, mm-hmm. and you can see every star in the sky, and you know, there's no town, there's no nothing, and you know, if you go to Sand Hills, there's no sign. I mean, there's just a little wood thing by the road that you take a left, and you start going up the dirt road, and then before you know it, this thing opens up in front of you. Like I had no idea that could be here. So, yeah, I've been super fortunate to play some really cool ones, but those would be, I'd say, the three.
Fantasy foursome, living or deceased, you and three others that you would like to play a round of golf with, who would they be?
Tiger definitely be in it. My college roommate, John Schaefer, who he's actually playing that the place in New Zealand that's so cool right now. Cape Kidnapper or whatever it is. He sent me a picture of it last night. God, who would be the fourth? I mean, right now, probably Scheffler. I think it'd be insane to hear those guys talk about just the way that they look at the game. Scott Gacheski's gotten to be a decent friend. Scott's an Omaha guy and has played on Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour for a while. Now his sons are – Luke is, I think, on the Canadian Tour this year, and then Trevor's a freshman, won the junior am, but is a freshman down in Florida. And I played with him last year for the first time since he beat me in the city tournament when we were 12. And – I just like to hear the way that those guys get around a course and what they're looking at. And yeah, I mean, Scott's out there screwing around. Like he's not playing like he normally would be in when he's competing, but that would be the dorky thing that I would love to do with those guys. There's probably some existential better, you know, comment to what's your ideal foursome, but I'll take one of my closest friends and two of the best players to ever live.
Yeah. And you're in the Hall of Fame with one of them. I mean, you share a Hall of Fame with Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I can't believe they let him in. That's crazy.
Kyle, I can't thank you enough, man. Have a great baseball season, and maybe we'll see you in Omaha.
If so, then bring your clubs. We'll figure out a place to play.
I'll do it. Hey, I played Omaha Country Club. I love it.
It's a pretty good start.
Yeah. Not bad, not bad. Thanks so much.
Bye, man.
This is Justin Akery. If hand or wrist pain is getting in the way of your daily life, it's time to see the specialists at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. Their fellowship-trained hand and wrist surgeons treat everything from arthritis and fractures to nerve injuries and carpal tunnel. And with Arkansas's only hand trauma telemedicine program, advanced care is available around the clock. Call Ortho at 501-686-TOSH to schedule your appointment today and get back to living pain-free. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
That's all the time for this edition of From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I want to thank Kyle Peterson for taking time out of his extremely busy schedule to join me via Zoom. Who knows, maybe the Razorbacks make it to Omaha, and I can tell you about my round with Kyle Peterson. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the short grass.
You have been listening to From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.